nothing to hide, Michael. Nothing to hide.
Nothing to hide except my dibs.
But this is true.
James Week's going to do the intro, or is Jamie?
I can get it. This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus aurelius by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 420 degrees Kelvin to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working? Can you feel it, Michael W. Dean and James II?
Yes.
Yeah.
James, is he getting naked?
Feel it. Always getting naked.
As always, the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT, no government license. This allows for use by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So we are here. We are the Freedom Fiends. I am Jeremy. I am joined by Michael W. Dean and our naked stripper friend, James Week II.
Yeah.
And how are you guys?
I'm good. I was going to tell who James is again.
Go for
how
it.
How are you, James?
We should I'm hear all right. from you.
So, James, why are you a naked stripper? Why do people think that? Why do they call you that?
Because I stripped at the Libertarian Party convention live on C-SPAN when running for national chair of the Libertarian Party.
How's that working out for you?
It worked out pretty well.
I know.
It worked out pretty well. I mean, I'm on the Freedom Fiends now.
This is
a brilliant success.
This man is a hero.
You probably wouldn't be otherwise. I mean, not that you're not great. I just never would have heard of you. So.
it definitely, it seems to be working out quite well.
Yep. Yep. And the thing that I really liked about it was Facebook knows your naked body now. I posted a meme today, or someone posted a meme, and I reposted it, and I posted it. It was made by JP, and it was something about being fearless. It was some quote from some motivational speaker about fearlessness. Mm-hmm. It was a picture of you naked on the stage at the Libertarian Party convention with your large and lovely figure. And Facebook, as before I even hit post, Facebook said, "Do you wish to tag James Weeks?"
Nice.
Put a box around your around your body and your head, not just your head. So many people shared you.
There are so many memes. I have one that I roll out every once in a while. You know, a never forget meme with the date on it. That's my personal favorite. You know, there's so many memes out there of James.
There are.
And the other day we had. Speaking of libertarian luminaries, the other day, who do we have on that didn't last a whole segment?
Matt Bergman from Punk Rock Libertarians.
Yeah, who I said horrible things about on that show. And I want to say Matt Bergman is a lovely fellow, and he does a great number of good things for liberty. And I can't say what's changed between now and then, but it was not money. But that guy knows how to make amends. Amends are not just, I'm sorry. Amends are doing something to make it right. And he made it right.
Well, way to go, Matt.
Yeah. Thank you, Matt, for your service.
That's good to hear, because I felt bad after we had to jet set him. So
yes.
Unceremoniously the other
night. We had to jettison him. So, you know, there's a... In the DVD extras of DIY or Die, How to Survive as an Independent Artist, my first movie. In the DVD extras, there's a little filmlet about the making of, and also, no, it's making of and like deleted scenes, like stuff that was cool, but that didn't make it in.
Yeah.
And one was Little Mike, and I filmed him at night in a gas station, like just in the parking lot. There's like gas pumps behind him, and I'm kind of panning around him with a handheld cheap little camera, and he's just giving this impassioned speech, and it's funny as hell. And he's talking about like, he's kind of like doing a motion like he's rowing a boat. He's got both of his hands like he's rowing a boat. And he's like, you know, rock and roll, it's a journey. A lot of people come along. Then once in a while, you know, someone just isn't working out. And he does this motion with his hand that looks like he's taking the oar and punching somebody in the head behind him with it and knocking him off the boat. It's pretty funny.
I got to watch that.
I think of that.
I've never seen the extras.
Extras are great.
I remember when I first started following the Fiends and started torrenting and got all that stuff. I watched everything back then, but I'd have to watch it again. And I don't think I watched the extras. So
yeah, the extras are some of the best part, man. Yeah. So you're gonna make a Bitcoin payment to me on air. I think this is historic. Maybe not. I don't know. It's definitely first time I've heard someone on radio making a Bitcoin payment. And Bitcoin did hit an all-time high today. And you're buying a Bitcoin flag. People can get them from blackblock.com. I ordered some, and they're a little cheaper than I'm selling them. I'm selling them for $30 to $40. I got them for $16. But you have to wait a month to get them because they're from China. So every once in a while, I order four or five of them and put them on Facebook, and they sell out within hours. And one didn't sell within hours. Excuse me. So I saved it, and Jeremy's buying it. So we're going to do this. The one thing I did see that was kind of funny, I saw a clip of it later, was I think it was the Today Show. It was some, square, happy news program like that, where they were talking about Bitcoin about 5 years ago, or not 4 years ago, like this new thing, not new, called Bitcoin. And they said, and you can even keep your money in a paper wallet. And they had a paper wallet that they'd bought from somebody that had like $50 in Bitcoin in it, which would now be like $600 in Bitcoin. And they opened it. They opened it up on air to show the inside of it. And it was high def TV. So they basically, like somebody watching, freeze framed it and grabbed the money from it.
Nice. I remember that. That was great.
The camera.
Yeah. That's awesome.
And the person posted about it on Reddit and said, I'll give this back to the Today Show or give to some charity. They should let me know. But it was like, it was kind of an ethical hacker. I don't even think it'd be unethical to have kept it if they're that stupid, but that's just me.
Yeah, but it was the ethical hacking situation where they offered to return the money.
You know,
if I remember right, they told them to keep it or something like that, too.
For outsmarting them, like for teaching them a lesson. They were like, it's worth the $50 or whatever it was. So
That's nice of them.
Yeah. So,
but it would be worth a lot of money now.
It would be. Yeah. I wish I had some. Nima Vidati said he just found a wallet today he forgot about that had $130 in it. It was like somebody sent him, like, I think, you know what it was? It was back when he was on the Freedom Fiends and we used to take Bitcoin donations. Like, a lot of it I'd cash out for running expenses. But back when we only had one host instead of 16 hosts, the other host actually got some of the money. but now it just wouldn't be worth it. Oh. You'd all get like nothing. And, then I couldn't do things like feeding the homeless and all That's the other true. Things I raise money for. So I put it to good use. And when there's some left over, I buy a burrito or a Kratom burrito or something. So
Kratom burritos.
Yeah. I'm kidding. But,
I have a burying Bitcoin story. Actually, I had a
horrible one.
This is pretty horrible too. I had a wallet with it was about 1.5 Bitcoins in it.
Yeah.
And I had a paper backup somewhere of that wallet, and was like, okay, I know where it's at. No big deal. I'll have, because I needed to reformat my phone because I was having an issue. And I reformatted my phone, and then I go find the paper backup, and I still haven't been able to find it 2 years later. And that Bitcoin, 1.5 Bitcoin is
is it worth $1,500?
Well, $1,600. It is. So it's here somewhere. It's got to be.
Well, when you lose Bitcoin, you actually make everyone else's Bitcoin worth a tiny bit more. So thank you for your service, James.
Yeah, I'll be accepting Bitcoin donations to anyone that wants.
I know.
For making your Bitcoin worth more, you can send me some Bitcoin.
I have a theory that Stefan Molyneux lost his Bitcoin key and or password, and because he has like $500,000 worth of Bitcoin right now, and he's still cyber begging. Not that he wouldn't, but no Bitcoin has been withdrawn from it. Like, I can't see even making as much in donations as he does. And then like the period when he was not making donations because everyone hated him, the transition of like him being a libertarian to him being a Trump supporter, like in there, and like, like sending the government feds, being an anarchist, sending the government goons after people using his videos in commentary, which is actually legal. But, he raised a stink and got someone kicked off, got True Shibes kicked off of Face Beef for a while. Yeah,
fair use.
Off of YouTube. Yeah, it's fair use. I mean, even under U.S. copyright law, that's fair use. So, yeah. But he's a big goon. But, you know, there was a point where he didn't have much money and he did not withdraw any. So my theory is he's lost the password for it. He thinks he'll remember it someday. He probably won't. He's got $500,000 and he's still pestering broke college students to give them all their money to tithe till it hurts.
Dick, that could, yeah, that would be a funny thing to do to somebody, you know, to keep asking him for money. Because he probably wouldn't want to admit that he lost it. You know, and changing Bitcoin addresses all of a sudden would kind of admit that.
Yeah, that would. So, yeah, Michael's floated this before, and it makes sense. How could, you know, and with all that money that gets put in there, nothing gets taken out. You know?
Well, none of Satoshi's original Bitcoin has been touched. What if Satoshi lost his key?
He did, I think. I think he died. I've talked about who I think that is, right?
Yes. I don't remember the name, but I know you've talked about it.
Yeah. Satoshi Nakamoto.
The fact that he's actually dead, right?
I think it's Hal Finney. Yeah. Hal Finney, who died of, like, Lou Gehrig's disease, I think, or something like that, and died broke, I think. And then someone tried to, like, what they do, they swatted his family because they wouldn't give him Bitcoin. After he died.
Wow. That's horrible.
Yeah, it is horrible. I'd raise Bitcoin to find that person and punish him. So I have a horrible Bitcoin story. I had 3 Bitcoin that someone donated to the Fiends. Well, I'm going to say to me, because otherwise no one will ever donate to the Fiends. I had 3 Bitcoin a number of years ago when they were worth about $50. And I was just sitting on them. And then, like, a year later, it was when it hit $1,000, the last time it was this high.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh my God, I have 3 Bitcoin. And I sat down trying to remember the password. And I remembered, like, something about the password, but I didn't remember the password. Like, I remembered, like, it relates to this thing from my childhood. And I spent over a week's time about 40 hours, like 8 hours a day, trying to type in passwords. And I finally was like, this is maddening. This is going to put me in the nut house. And I destroyed the wallet. So I couldn't keep trying.
Oh, wow.
And then I found out that there are people who will help you in a situation like that. Like, if you have part of the password or some of the password, they'll run brute force password through it for you for a share of it. And they'll definitely do it for like $3,000 worth, you know, for half of it or something.
Yeah.
Found out too late.
It's all about time.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Is your child defiant, independent, annoyingly inquisitive? After a long, hard day of following the rules, who wants to deal with troublesome kids? 49% of children suffer from oppositional defiant disorder, or ODD. Symptoms of ODD include independent thought, rampant creativity, and failure to submit to authority. But now there's a solution. The good people at Pilfer can help you with their time-release, once-daily capsule, Compliacin. Your child won't be able to form his own opinions, let alone express them. It maintains your child's ability to go to a state-run school and perform simple tasks around the house. You won't have to worry about parenting, and the school won't have to deal with your kid asking questions. Compliacin. You'll go from this.
Quit telling me what to do!
To this.
Good morning, Mother. I love going to school. And this week we're learning all about how the government is our federal family and they're here to help us.
Compliacin. Talk to your school psychiatrist and ask for it by name.
It sounded like either kind of inquisitive or kind of sick. Sick kitty. Get better, sick kitty. Oh, Jim, Jesus. Get well soon. Yeah.
I'm sick.
Yep. Jim's got food poisoning. So he says, although most food poisoning is not food poisoning, it's usually, what's the thing they call stomach flu that's not really flu? That thing.
It's like
the one day flu that you mostly feel in your stomach that's not really an influenza.
Oh, like the 24-hour cold or whatever.
24-hour flu. Yeah, there's another name for it. I forget what it is. But we're going to talk about good things instead of disgusting, horrible things. We're going to talk about the Rights Brigade, yes. which is an organization that a good friend of ours, Joel, started. And it's all about doing good in the world. So can you guys read a little bit from the, James, can you read from the other page up? Rights Brigade about...
Yeah, I've got the mission statement here.
Yeah, read the mission statement, please.
We got, our mission is to provide organize quality professional activism in defense of our basic rights as human individuals, and to provide publicity for and documentation of said activism. We strive to organize a group of activists of the highest possible quality who engage in effective activism with courage, humility, diplomacy, respect, honesty, tenacity, and intelligence. The Rights Brigade's mission centers around the defense of our basic human freedom. We believe every individual has a right to peacefully coexist with the rest of humankind, to live as they see fit, so long as they do not forcibly infringe upon the rights of others to do the same. We also believe that these rights, though universal, are meaningless unless they are being exercised, and that the exercise thereof will only be possible so long as those rights are vigorously defended. We will not trust the defense of those rights to any institution, but will personally see to it that they remain secure. We seek to organize and promote effective activism in five key areas, and those five key areas are justice, defense, representation, prosperity, and truth.
Nice. Yep, and this is our friend Joel from New Hampshire, who's really good friends with a lot of people we know. I'm good friends with him. I've never met him in person, but he's, you know, friends in person with Derek J., and a bunch of other cool folks. And the site, if you want to check it out, and we're going to be talking about this about once a week for a month, is rightsbrigade.com. Rights, like I know my rights, brigade, like BRIGADE.com. And also link it in the show notes. And can you read a little from the other page there, Jeremy?
Sure. It says, from the About page. Founded in 2015, the Rights Brigade is a citizen activism platform dedicated to giving a voice, mission, and structure to activists seeking an effective way to bettering their world. The Rights Brigade embraces a decentralized volunteer model supported only by anonymous tips for exceptional activism. The purpose of this non-traditional model is to remain as dynamic, independent, and committed to its mission as possible. We believe that we, as humans and individuals, have the right to live and thrive as we see fit, so long as we do not aggress upon others. As such, we stand up to for humanity's basic rights in any peaceful, non-aggressive, positive way we can. We currently operate across several regions of New Hampshire, but are always ready for expansion wherever possible. Contact us for more information about starting operations in another area.
Yep. And they do a lot of jury rights outreach, kind of like, you know, other organizations do, but they're their own organization.
Yeah, they do.
And they, what's that?
I said, yeah, I was going to say they do jury nullification pamphleting, as far as I could yep. gather from the last time we brought them up, so which is good.
For New Hampshire, has to be specific, state specific, because it's, I believe, the only state where you can actually the defense attorney can instruct the jury that jury nullification is legal and a possibility, which is kind of mind blowing because. It's kind of, it's legal everywhere, but it's kind of quasi-illegal some places, and they've actually prosecuted people for jury tampering. For people that don't know, jury nullification is where juries have the right and have had the right for a very long time to, you know, say to the judge, we're voting innocent, even though we think he did it, because we believe the law is unjust. Is that would you guys say that's an accurate?
That's a pretty accurate description,
it is.
Yep. And it's starting to gain hold, but this is kind of mind-blowingly cool. In New Hampshire, it's now legal to tell the jury that that's a possibility. There have actually been some cases thrown out because of it. You know, I've talked a lot about why we're on the air. Like, people are like, man, why aren't you on a podcast? Why are you, like, talking to old people in the middle of the night? And I'm like, because those are the people that are going to be on juries, man. That's why we do it, you know? They're going to be on a jury, and they're going to say, wait, I heard that guy on that show I like say that marijuana has no victim. You know, he's right. So,
yeah.
It's one big reason I do radio.
So if there's no victim, Don't quit.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Are you tired of stinky socialists trying to take over America?
And are you also tired of theorists talking about the free market as a cure-all for every problem with no first-hand experience of how the market actually works?
Well, the Truth Justice American Way app gives you wall-to-wall shows by hosts who not only understand the market, but tell you how they make money in a variety of patriotic endeavors.
The Truth Justice American Way app for Android is 24/7 streaming audio content on the topics of finance, liberty, self-defense, and technology.
All the hosts are all American Americans from all over America.
And the app is made in Wyoming, the cowboy state.
Because you should buy American, even with free Android apps.
Truth Justice American Way. Useful information, compelling personalities, and superior American audio quality.
Go on the Google Play Store or the Amazon App Store and search Truth Justice American Way.
God bless each and every one of you, and God bless America.
There's always room for Jell-O. There's always room for Jell-O. I'll try to do it like Jell-O. So, Jell-O, are you guys familiar with Jell-O Biafra?
I know of
I know.
Jell-O.
I know what it is.
Yep.
Yes. I know.
Yeah. So, Jell-O Biafra, for those old people in the middle of the night, Joel was listening to us. Joel from rightsbrigade.com, which we talked about in the last segment, rightsbrigade.com, was listening, and he said, old people listening, talking to old people in the middle of the night, LOL. Yeah, I guess it is pretty LOL, but we're not only talking to old people, we're talking to the
truck insomniacs,
the insane, unemployed, unemployable people in other countries at their day jobs, not doing their day jobs. So,
I never thought about that aspect.
Send me that Bitcoin.
Oh, yes, Bitcoin. I did. All right, I will send
it. Give me my money. All right, so Jell-O Biafra was the singer in my favorite band as a Ute, Dead Kennedys, who are amazing. And even if you don't like punk rock, you should go read their lyrics, because in like 1979, they wrote songs that the lyrics sound as fresh then as they do now, and maybe we'll read some later, but we've read them on this show. You know, things about government intrusion and how they're spying on you in the middle of the night and stuff that sounded crazy until a few years ago when Edward Snowden proved it wasn't. And it wasn't even nearly as common back then. Like in the 80s and 70s, pretty much the only people the government probably spied on were dissidents or people they knew by name and suspected. They tried to spy on everybody, but it just wasn't technologically possible. Now they spy on everyone. Did you know that that the FBI has said publicly that they have someone, they have a team of people whose full-time job is to listen to every show on talk radio in America?
Really?
So literally, someone at the FBI is listening to our show sometime this week, probably.
Spectacular. Hi, they FBI.
They probably have a guy just for LRN. Yeah, I mean, if they'd raid Ian's house just to get his computers to try to find something. I mean, Ian runs LRN. We're on LRN as well as GCN.
It has been sent, sir. Sorry.
Thank you. So. Bitcoin? Yeah, I see it incoming there on my Electrum wallet that I imported from a paper wallet. So I did an article. Do you have the article about ugly paper wallets there, Jeremy?
No, that was from a couple days ago. Is it in my email? I can grab it for
later. Put that in the show notes. Just put the link there. We don't really need to talk about it other than to say that I wrote an article on the bipcoin.org site about doing ugly paper wallets, which is an idea I've not seen anyone do. Like, basically, you can do a Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies. You can do a paper wallet, which means like you make a couple of QR codes, one for the public address, one for the private address, and you fold it up so the public address is on the outside, the private address is not, and then you can like hand it to someone like, here's Bitcoin. It's kind of like handing them money. And usually people make them really beautiful. Like Davy Barker makes them and sells them at Porkfest, you know, for a little bit more money than the amount of Bitcoin in them. Or you can sell them with or give them away with no Bitcoin in them. And then people can scan the public address on the front and add Bitcoin to it. And they make really nice gifts because they're really beautiful. But so I came up with the idea of, like, instead of making them beautiful and obvious and works of art that look like something you'd buy at a Grateful Dead show that are almost tie-dye colors usually, why not make them really ugly and look like common objects you could leave on a table and no one would know what they are? So I made some examples that all work. I printed them out and they worked. I made an address with no money in it, but it worked. And made five or six wallets, you know, that looked like, you know, one page flyers for like punk rock shows in the 80s or like, you know, punk art shows at storefront galleries that didn't exist. That, like, if you had this in a pile of papers, here's the idea. Like, you know, if you start posting these, hanging these on your wall in your home, your friends who know what Bitcoin or know what they are, and, you know, someone who's not a friend who's in your house at a party is going to scan it and take your money. But if this did not go mainstream and only a few people knew about it, and you had, like, let's say you had a safe that had all your money in it and all your bearer bonds. That's always the trope in movies. Bearer bonds don't really exist anymore, but they did for a long time. It was basically big pieces of paper that could have millions of dollars in them that were redeemable anywhere and didn't require, you know, they were not made out to a particular person. The bearer of them owned them. So, you know, like I think, I mean, a movie, there were a lot of movies in the 50s and 60s that had bearer bonds, but
even in the 80s, Beverly Hills Cop.
Yeah, and even the 2000s, there was a David Fincher movie that was sort of a ripoff on the movie. What was that movie in the 60s about the blind woman who's alone in her house, and people try to break in to get the, like, teddy bear full of heroin? I forget what it's called. I think it's a Hitchcock movie or something. It's kind of like a Hitchcock
movie. Like a Hitchcock movie, but yeah. I don't know. I didn't watch enough of those to remember all of them. So.
Yeah.
More than once, rather. So I don't remember.
So there's that movie, but then there was a takeoff on it. They starred Jodie Foster as the mother and some young actress who was like 10 who looked exactly like Jodie Foster as
Panic
the
Room?
Yes, Panic Room. Yeah, okay. They're trying to get the bearer bonds. And one of the criminals, the really wigga-looking guy with the cornrows. Oops, did I say that? The urban-looking white boy.
The urban-looking.
Is the guy from, what's his name, from Requiem for a Dream, the cute boy, the main character.
Who was that? It wasn't Leto.
There's people screaming at the radio right now. Jared Leto. Yeah. They're screaming the name of both of the movies that I couldn't remember. And then Jared Leto. Yeah. Yeah. He's got cornrows and looks really like chunky and wigga in that. It's funny. But they're trying to get bearer bonds. So basically, like, I found a way to make, like, Xeroxed bearer bonds that work that don't look like bearer bonds. So the idea is, you know, and people, like, commented on this, a great idea, but, you know, people who know Bitcoin is going to know it. So my idea is, like, you know, if this does not go mainstream, like, somebody who has, let's say you have a safe that has your gold bars, your hash oil, you know, your gold bars, you know, your stocks and bonds, a pile of cash, and then a bunch of, like, sentimental crap from your life, you know, like punk rock bands you used to be in, flyers for shows you saw, you know, a three inch stack of that kind of stuff. What's funny? The bands you used to be in? Everyone used to be in a band.
Of course. No, Michael. Yeah.
You haven't been in a band?
No, I'm like one of the only fiends, I think.
I made a record that looked like a real punk rock record with you as three people on the cover.
This is very true.
And it was called The Murder Dogs, the Long Island Murder Dogs.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
That's your band then.
Yes, really that was. Is my band.
Put it this way, more people seen that than saw a lot of my friends' records back in the day.
Well, there you go. So score one for me, I guess.
You know, I should share that on Punk Rock Libertarians now that I'm a... Oops, wait. I should try to get someone to share that on that really popular site with 150,000 followers, Punk Rock Libertarians, and see if people think
that's
it's real.
That's a good reach. Yeah, that'd be pretty funny. Yeah. People would be going, where can I find this band? I've never heard of them.
Punk Rock Libertarian shared something today that was on the Freedom Fiends radio site. It got more views than the Freedom Fiends radio site has had on Facebook in its entire existence. Not the Freedom Fiends site. FreedomFiends.com gets a lot of views, but Freedom Fiends page on Facebook does not. Yeah.
Wow. So, well, yeah. Well, see, that's really what it is. You can. It doesn't really matter. Well, I mean, quantity.
Matt
quality
Bergman runs that.
Quality Thanks, does. Matt. Quality does help, but when it comes to those pages with over 150,000 followers, you can really post just about anything and get a tremendous amount of reach.
No, the worst things are the more reach they get generally. Like, not the worst, but the more lowest common denominator, the fewest words, like,
yes,
the more meme-y it is. You know, yeah, like if you put a treatise in a meme, it's not going to get a lot of shit.
Oh, no, of course. Yeah, no, it's the simplest ones. Yeah, but the ones that I've made over the past couple of years, the ones that have took off the most, are always my throwaway ones. Ones that I'm just putting together just to fill some time, and I'm just like, oh, whatever, and I just throw this out, and they end up taking off. So you never know, but when you have a page like that, it helps, and so that's good.
My analogy for that is always the Red Hot Chili Peppers, because the Red Hot Chili Peppers was a joke band started by guys in like three or four other real bands. Not the singer. The singer had never been in a band and couldn't sing and just kind of rapped when they started, but I mean, Flea was in Fear. I mean, he was in a popular punk rock band. All of them were in like real bands, but it started as a joke, like on a Tuesday night, and it became more popular. But, like, by the third show, everybody had to quit their other bands because it was so popular.
that's funny, because I always thought of them as a joke. I was never a
Chili Peppers fan. They got he finally learned to sing. Although, you know, I read a review of Nick Cave once that would also fit with Anthony Kiedis. At one point, that's what Beavis and Butthead called him. At one point, there was a review of Nick Cave that said Nick Cave has always had problems with pitch, problems with singing on key, and with heroin addiction. With this album, he has beat the latter and is beginning to address the former. I would say that probably fit any of the last eight, you know, Chili Peppers records too.
That's funny.
About Anthony Crocus. Yeah.
That's funny.
So we haven't gotten around to what we're talking about yet, which is Jello Biafra. So real quick, to set this up for the next segment. So Jello Biafra. First of all, Biafra, like, do people know what Jell-O is? It's Jell-O pudding. It's a food that doesn't have any nutritional value. I'm going to get sued for saying that, allegedly.
It's delicious.
And Biafra, do you guys know what Biafra is or was?
No.
It was a short-lived nation in Africa where everyone was starving. And, like, it was kind of a symbol of starvation in the 60s, 70s. Like, you know, a Biafran, you know, was like... when they say there are children starving in Africa, Biafra was what they were talking about because it was all in the news back then. I think it's part of Somalia now.
That's possible. I'm looking it up right now.
Part of Nigeria.
Nigeria. Yeah, it
existed from 67 to 1970.
And Africa is like my least studied continent. So
it's everyone's least studied continent, which is why the U.S. is sending JSOC to go over there and take it over, because no one knows, because there's a lot of natural resources and... You know, there's warlords that can easily be, like, over.
Yeah, man, that's what the vibranium is, isn't it?
By 50 millions. Vibranium? Everything in your cell phone comes from Africa, pretty much.
Never mind, it's a X-Men reference.
They got a cool coat of arms.
Yeah, it is. It looks like the Italian flag with the sunset on it, sort of. So Jello Biafra was the singer in the band Dead Kennedys, which were one of my favorite bands. He taught me to hate the government, and now he's a statist. So we're going to talk about that when we come back.
He was probably always a statist.
Yeah, I just didn't know, because he hated Ronald Reagan, and I thought he hated all
government. He just hates the Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
Silly leftist.
More Jell-O when we come back.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
And go on the sidebar of the Freedom Fiend site. We now have Amazon links for Amazon US, Amazon UK, and Amazon Canada due to popular demand. Worms.
Mm-hmm.
So we're
that
back.
Was kind of a that was a little ditty I wrote and played called "Would You Tar and Feather a Tax Collector?" It's a rhetorical question. Don't send me your answers. There you go. And if it were legal, no. If you could get away with it, no. We do not recommend tarring and feathering. That's another one for the app, Jeremy, for the excuse app.
We do not recommend tarring and feathering of the tax collector.
We do not recommend doing this. Yeah.
It was funny is how common that was during like the Revolutionary War and stuff like that. Like, that's what they did back then.
Yeah, and it could kill
crazy.
You. If it didn't kill you, it was extremely painful. People make, in the cartoons, they make it look like something cute and annoying. No, it's like burning tar.
It's hot tar they're pouring over top.
Yeah, they're pouring it. Yeah, boiling tar they pour over. Yeah, it's not cute and funny.
It would ruin you for life at best.
If it didn't,
slowly at worst.
Yeah.
So
it's not something that, you know, burns all full burns all over your body, plus you're covered in feathers. It's not a good
way to go. But that song is very much in the style of the Dead Kennedys record. That song was inspired by a Dead Kennedys record called "In God We Trust Incorporated," which was inspired by DC hardcore, like Minor Threat. They said that Jello said in interviews, like, yeah, we did this record after hearing that stuff. It's faster and harder than what we've been doing. And then they went back to doing kind of cool, hard-edged, psychedelic, scary stuff, which I liked a lot better. But I really liked that album. That album's like 35 minutes long, "In God We Trust Incorporated." And that's the one I'm pretty sure that the cassette, since it was so short, they put it out instead of one side, you know, 15 minutes on one side and 17, whatever, 20 on the other side. They put it out 35 minutes on one side of the cassette, and the other side was blank, and it said, "This side left blank so you can tape another record." And then they said, "Home recording is killing the music industry," which was a thing the music industry was saying. It was a slogan. It said, "Home recording is killing the music industry. Now you can help."
Nice.
Which really inspired me a lot with, like, you know, that probably had something to do with that one thing, probably had something to do with the BIPCOT no government license. It had, you know, that stuff inspired a lot of what I do. It informed a lot of my evolving worldview as a young man. And I said at one time that Jello Biafra taught me more about how the world works than my dad did. And I still stand by that. But there's nothing useful I can learn from Jello anymore now that I've gone straight up no government man, because I always assumed that he didn't believe in government, and people called him an anarchist, but that was uninformed people, because he hated Ronald Reagan. He hated Haig. He hated all the people that were running the world in the 80s and wrote songs about it. I saw him play live July 4th, 1984 in Washington, D.C. Think about like the date, the year, and the city. It was the first time I saw them. It was on the Washington Mall. You could see the Washington Monument in the distance. Ronald Reagan had tried to keep the Beach Boys from playing nearby. It was the Secretary, Earl Butz, the Secretary of Agriculture, who later lost his job because he was overheard at a party and someone repeated that he said, "N-words just want to have loose shoes, tight kitty, and a warm place to poo." I'm making that radio friendly. And I've always thought, what's wrong with, you know, tight kitty and a warm place to poo? But I guess people in government wanted more, and they took it. So Earl Butz had tried to stop. Ronald Reagan had wanted the Beach Boys to play outside on the Washington Mall for the public at taxpayer expense. And everyone thought Reagan was hip because he wanted the Beach Boys. Like, oh, they're so hip. And and Earl Butz had tried to block that. Like, he was the Secretary of Agriculture, and he tried to deny a permit or something like that. And so they had the Beach Boys anyway. But across the mall, the Dead Kennedys were playing, and over the stage it said, "Earl Butts, eat your heart out." You know, like, if you think the Beach Boys... Oh, he said the Beach Boys would attract the wrong element. So if you think the Beach Boys would attract the wrong element, here's Dead Kennedys who make them look like the Beach Boys or Debbie Gibson. We'll be back with more about Jello Biafra. What's that?
They're so clean cut.
I know. Although they did a lot of drugs and, you know, people partied to them, boogied. Brian Johnson, was the other name? Who was their singer? Brian...
Wilson.
I don't know. He was Wilson. He was a crazed coke addict and a brilliant dude. Yeah, we'll be back with more about Jello Biafra after this trip to the market. And Joel, I'm working on your second quote right now. Worms. That's what radio's for, is telling one message to one person.
Thank you for being a fiend. You may know the show is Triggerweens. We're saying worms and your new bigger buttons on. And if you threw a party and invited every yak you knew, you would see we'd still follow the NAP, and we're covered by Bipcot. Thank you for being a fiend.
Broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's low orbit ion cannon, high atop Fidel Chavez Plaza, on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017, in the Alpha Centauri region. The Freedom Feeds is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. So we are back.
Yeah, I'm putting the final touches on this quote here for Joel. Turned out to be longer than I thought it should be. And isn't that what radio's for? James has not heard this yet and laughed really hard when I said it. Isn't that what nationally syndicated radio's for, is giving one message to one person?
Well,
but
sure.
It really is. It really is. Hey. There's actually a 30 Rock that has that joke. I've said it before I saw this, but it was kind of funny. It was... the 30 Rock, where they go to the place where Kenneth, the redneck page, is from, which is called, not Coal Mountain, it's something, Stone Mountain, somewhere in Georgia, that technically he's their diversity hire, because even though he's really white, technically the county that he grew up in never actually joined the Union after seceding in the Civil War. So they're still a foreign nation, technically. But you know, go down there looking for some like down home comedies to add another writer to the staff, because they want someone who's like the real America, you know, which apparently is in Georgia. So they go down there and they're watching the news in the hotel room while they're waiting to go to this comedy club. And the guy in the news is like, you know, today pork prices are up, blah, blah, blah. And Sally... Debbie says that she'd like you to water her plants. She's out of town for 3 days. On TV. And that's really what I think radio's for. I like it.
Well, hey,
so, yeah, Joel,
listen,
I'm almost done. Spell checking now, Joel.
I have no problem with giving personal messages to people that are actually willing to be up and listening at this hour. You know what?
Yeah,
if you're gonna listen live in the feeds, you want me to say something to you, send me a message. You know, we'll talk. We'll see.
We should just read prayers on the air for money like the Christians do.
That's not a bad idea. Well, James is a minister, right? So
I am a minister, so that would count.
Well, I want a prayer for a girl with faraway eyes.
I still have to take care of that.
What?
I don't know what that means.
It's a Rolling Stones reference. It's like, oh. I was driving through Bakersfield and I heard the colored band on the radio station. Not colored. Why did I say colored? Because there is a Rolling Stone that talks about the colored girls. But yeah, well, come by, some Puerto Rican girls are just dying to meet you. No, he says, I was driving through Bakersfield, California, listening to the country music radio station, and he said, send a prayer in with $10, and we'll read your prayer on the radio, and I did, and the next week, I heard my prayer. I heard a prayer on the radio for a girl with faraway eyes. It's their kind of like minstrel show, white minstrel show country song, Faraway Eyes. You ever heard it?
I don't think I've ever heard that one. If I have, I don't recall it. That's why
it's racist against white people. But
it sounds that way.
It is. Yeah. So we should do that, though. We should have people send in Bitcoin or Bitcoin.
I'm all for it. I'm actually
read things on the radio.
James and I were.
I'm an ordained minister, so that would it would be very official prayers too.
Yeah, and we were involved in a conversation about this, you and I, a couple weeks ago or so, a month ago or so, and I was supposed to take care of that, too. I was going to become an ordained minister, so then we'd have two of us, so we'd definitely do this. This would be great. It could be a whole new segment. Wow. I'm down.
Well, we're going to talk about Jelly Biafra in this segment, and he has a YouTube show called What Would Jello Do? Which is just offensive on so many levels.
yeah,
he does think he's God. Laugh, though, he so. Really does.
Oh, well, that's a whole different story.
He reminds me of Molyneux in a lot of ways and has similar followers.
Oh, that's scary.
But, you know, was in a punk rock band. And he also, like, that got funny with the
money.
Yeah, he is. He got funny with the money and, like, ripped off his band back in the day.
That's
like,
no
you know,
good.
He owned a house, and they were all, like, starving and working for FedEx and on welfare and stuff. And one of them, the drummer, D.H. Pellegro, the colored fellow in the band. The colored fella in the band lived in the same apartment building as me in L.A., which you know someone's not doing well if they're living in the same apartment building I lived in L.A. He was my downstairs neighbor. So, yeah, they were all broke. But I remember... the band, stop breathing. Who's breathing? I hear nasal breathing. Which one is it?
Sorry, it might be me because I'm sick.
You can turn away from the mic. But because I'm going to filibuster, you're just going to be reading this segment. So you're just my text to speech computer for part of the segment. Yes, sir. But yeah, so Jello got sued by the other three members of the band for getting funny with the money. Basically, what happened was he ran the record label they're on. He signed this contract with them in the 80s, like got a lawyer to write it up, told them they didn't need lawyers, which is always a danger sign when someone says, don't need a lawyer. My lawyer looked at it. So they signed it, and it was basically like, you know, it was like they got 25 cents per record sold or something. And nobody did the maths of like, I wonder if, you know, records will cost more in the future. Maybe we should ask for a percentage. This was when records cost like $3.99 or maybe $5.99. So, you know, 20 years later, when records are selling for, you know, almost $20, and he's still paying each band member 25 cents per record, and he's keeping, like, you know, $4 for his artist royalty plus whatever he makes on the label. Whatever he makes on the label is his. He's running the label. But he was keeping a much larger artist royalty for record sales. And he got kind of funny with the credits, too. Like, he, you know, they all wrote the music together, and he didn't play an instrument and couldn't even really carry a tune, but he would hum. Like, this is exactly what Tony Fagg did in my band Bomb, so I know this trick. You know, Tony couldn't carry a tune. He's the drummer. He wrote good lyrics. Fortunately, there was never much money in Bomb, so it never went to court. By the way, Tony tried to pass a message to me through somebody the other day saying, hey, I'm back in San Francisco, so why don't you come out here and we'll do a reunion gig? And I told the guy to tell Tony I would sooner push a pencil up my penis and break it than be in the same room with that guy again.
Wow.
Yeah, and if he's listening, that's my message to you.
Whoa.
Guy's the first sociopath I've met. I don't ever want to meet him again. He's all friendly now. He's like, oh, hey, Michael, I hear you have a radio show. I hear you're doing well. He's working as an electrician, which is fine and respectable, but I don't care what he's doing. It's got nothing to do with what he's doing or what I'm doing. It's like, I don't want to know the guy. So, anyhoodle. I was interrupting myself. Anyhoodle is what you say when someone's interrupting you. So, anyhoodle, I've been interrupting myself. All right, so Jello Biafra, yeah, I got funny with the band. He did this thing where, like, and this was told to me by their guitar player, East Bay Ray, whatever his last name is, who I jammed with a few times after he left Dead Kennedys. Somewhere there's a recording of East Bay Ray playing all the instruments and me singing. I think I put it on one of my sites at one point, but I don't know where it is. It's a funny little tune. It was me auditioning for his band. He was like, here's a tape of me playing everything. You write some lyrics and sing it, and then give it back to me. That was how he, like, not I'll take time and sit down in a room with you and play. Like, here, do it over tapes. And then came over to my house, grabbed the tape and split, and then called me and said, no, I don't want to do it. But so the band Jello would do things in the rehearsal room, like go, okay, so here's a melody I came up with. You know, like basically a rhythm. And then the band would write a melody around that, and it would be Holiday in Cambodia. And then he kept, like, you know, 50% of the artist royalties. Like, he put words in music, Jello Biafra, when they really wrote a lot of the music. So they sued him in probably, I don't know, 95, 96, something like that. And Little Mike and I went to the court. It was in San Francisco. It was in public courtroom there with a jury. Jello demanded a jury instead of like doing it in arbitration like they should have done. And like the lawyers ate up all the money. It was a 3-week trial. Jello lost, basically, because Jello tried to, like, thought he was smarter than everybody, tried to make a kangaroo court of it, tried to, like, make long statements, you know, blah, 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 blah. The jury, who were all, like, missing work and wanted to be home, wanted to be working because they all looked like working class people, like, sided with the three guys in the band besides Jello because they came off as, like, poor working men getting ripped off by the capitalist leader, or the capitalist, like, owner, which really is funny because, like, all the Dead Kennedy songs are against that, but that's how it came off. I was in the courtroom 3 days of the, or 4 days of the 3-week trial, and Jello did not look good to the jury. He looked like, I'm smarter than everyone, so you should do what I say. And that's how he talks. So yeah, he lost and they won control of it. And now, like, you know, you can buy Dead Kennedys t-shirts at Walmart, and I think it's a beautiful thing. So there. Nice. So we're almost done. We still haven't gotten to the article. Do you guys ever listen to Dead Kennedys?
I never really got into them.
Not religiously, but listened to them before. Yeah.
Oh, one of the, you know, I got something to send you for the show notes. One of the ugly punk rock paper wallets I made for Bitcoin was actually a Dead Kennedys record cover. It's from In God We Trust Incorporated. It's the poster, I think, on the back, or the poster that came in it. It's like Jesus on a crucifix over a face of Abe Lincoln with, like, And where the cross intersects, there was a barcode, and I just replaced that barcode with a QR code, and it looks like it should be there. You know, it doesn't look wrong.
I'm looking at it right now. It does look like it should be there.
Found the article? Oh, yeah. I sent you the link.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
Cool. You have the link, right? You can grab that picture, Jeremy, for the show pic, or should I send it to you?
No, the whole pic of all of them, or what?
I'll send it to you.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was looking at something else for the show when you were talking about that, and I have the picture, the big picture in front of me with I have the document with all the pictures.
There's also a really good Russian translation of the Bitcoin FAQ now. There was a really bad translation for about a week, and then this woman in New Hampshire, Marika, translated it, and Christopher Lawless, who was Ron Paul's giant, if you remember, checked the translation. And it's good, man. It's on the Bitcoin site.
Well, thank you both for your service.
Yep, thank you for your service, you guys.
Awesome.
A lot of good coming out of New Hampshire.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Wake up and smell the freedom. One of the easiest things you can do to help Liberty is to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to help keep them drone-proof. You can set up your home computer to download and share Freedom Fiends archives over BitTorrent. You can even set up scheduling so it only shares while you're asleep or at work. Put your unused computing power to work and help keep the Freedom Fiends around well into the future. Simply go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Torrent Club link and learn how to torrent and share Freedom Fiends archives.
I started saying that before. It was the craziest thing. I've been sick plenty of times in my life, but normally it's like, you know, if I feel it at all the day before, it's nothing major, and then when I wake up the next morning, it's hit me overnight.
Do you want me to edit tonight? I can do it. I'll be all.
No, I'm fine. I'm getting right. Better. I'm just still very congested.
Editing makes you better.
But when I was on the other night, what was it, Monday night, it was all of a sudden, like, half an hour, 40 minutes into the show, it just hit me like a ton of bricks. Like, I've never been awake for that to happen to me. And, like, it just, I went from being kind of, like, just, like, feeling kind of off to, oh, my gosh, I feel, like, lightheaded. The congestion's coming on. I went to go cough, and I was, like, hacking. Like, I was holding the cough button for a good 2 minutes at one point while I think Jim was talking, because I was just coughing. Oh no, you were talking because that was still the first hour. So yeah, it just hit me really bad.
The name of this show is Jello Biafra Used to Be Cool. We were talking about Jello Biafra, the singer in Dead Kennedys, who is still kind of clinging to stardom. Actually, he's kind of popular. He has a band called they play bars and they're popular. He actually makes more doing his spoken word. He does like 5.5 hour spoken word lectures, which would probably be cool for about the first hour. And then, you know, then he'd start talking about how great Hillary is. And then you'd want to leave. And then like there'd be 4 more hours after that. So, but he has a band that some friends of mine are in. The guys from the band Victim's Family, I think it is. If they're still the same guys. In a band called, I think it's called like the Guantanamo School of Medicine or something like that. But so, you know, the guys against government. Here's the too long, didn't read summary of what I don't like about this guy. He taught me to hate government or to distrust government, but it turns out he only hated Republicans. He doesn't hate government. He thinks that, you know, things can be fixed, it can be tweaked, and he's very leftist. And I don't know. He's one of these people that's brilliant but stupid. The singer from Black Flag, Henry Rollins, is the same way. Brilliant guy, brilliant speaker, taught me a lot about the world when I was younger. Still trying to, you know, still thinks government can be fixed. It cannot be fixed. It's wrong. And the problem with these people, and this is a problem with a lot of people, and once this is fixed, once this is done, we'll be done with governments and we can work toward replacing them. And it's not going to be a violent revolution this time, because that always leads to more government. It's going to be, you know, Nima Vedati said it best. It's, and I'll say this every day for a year. He said, at some point, you know, in the next few years, government is going to be like MySpace. 300 million registered users and no one signed in for 5 years. You know, no one's checked in. No one uses it anymore. Like, you'll still have to, you know, technically be a citizen, but you know, it doesn't matter anymore, because everything governments used to do is really quickly being replaced by technology for the most part, and by private services. And I'm not going to say, oh, it's all the blockchain, but you know, a lot of things blockchain is good for, a lot of things blockchains are not good for. But all of the technologies combined, people having the power in their pocket that like it took to send a rocket to the moon in 1969, you know, it's a game changer. And the cow is out of the, not only out of the barn to where it can't be put back in, like the cow is out of the barn. It's been trucked off to market, slaughtered in the supermarket. And the cow is now, you know, a yummy steak in your tummy. And the government's trying to put the cow back in the barn. That's how far gone this is. And the thing people need to realize that'll really make, that'll be a game changer, is when like a majority or near majority of people realize you don't have to pick the better of two evils. You know, that's the game. They can play that game for 500 more years. Once everyone just says no to that, there won't have to be a revolution. It'll be like, there'll still be a Congress, there'll still be presidents, but they won't matter. So Jello is part of the problem, not the solution at this point. So read a little bit of this article. Read some of what it says about it. And Angela Keaton sent me this. Didn't say this is great. Didn't say it's bad. Just sent it to me. Thank you, Angela, for your service. So go ahead and read some of this, guys. Whoever can read. Yeah, whoever can read.
After Donald Trump won the presidential election, Jello Biafra, former dead Kennedy's frontman, fell face first onto his bed, pounding his fist and shouting, I can't really say this on the, how can people be so stupid?
Feinsteining yeah. stupid. There you go. Feinsteining, for the F word.
Didn't he run against, he ran against
Feinstein, actually.
Yeah.
And that's funny.
She won as mayor, but he came in fourth out of 10 candidates.
Yeah. Oh, that's funny.
For Biafra, who spent nearly 30 years as a leftist pundit, doing as many spoken word appearances as punk rock shows, Trump's ascendancy confirmed.
Hang on. Radio tip.
There we go.
We're going out.
We're going out.
Let it go out.
He would have finished that sentence.
Yeah, I would have finished it.
Yeah, but the music's so loud, you wouldn't really hear it necessarily.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Ugh, I'm so sick of looking at Steve's wedding pics, and I'm all out of passive-aggressive comments. What else am I supposed to do at work all day?
Sick of stalking your ex on Facebook?
Yeah!
Are you all out of cute cats and autocorrect mishaps to lolat?
Duh!
Freedom Fiends to the rescue! The Fiends now have a blog. Read all about the latest tyranny today. Dream about lip pair. Laugh while Western civilization collapses. Just click on the cat icon to the right of freedomfiends.com. Freedom Fiends blog. Read it!
So we're talking about tired old punker Jello Biafra. You know what's interesting about Jello, though? He suffered for your sins, for your punk rock sins. Remember we talked about Gilman Street at one point? That punk rock club in the East Bay is like all ages, run by people from what's the magazine? Punk rock zine, Maximum Rock and Roll. Jello got beat up for being Jello Biafra and put in the hospital by skinheads at a show at Gilman Street. That's pretty serious.
Wow. Yeah, that is serious.
Which, you know, is why smart people should carry guns to punk rock shows. Although, in Oakland, I wouldn't set foot in Oakland without a gun, but you can't legally set foot in Oakland without a gun, so I'm never going there. I don't have a reason to go there. You know, F that place.
Yeah, I wouldn't really care about legality at that point.
Well,
yeah.
Caring about legality, like if it were suddenly illegal where I live, I'd have some choices to make, but it's easy to make the choice not to go to Oakland, especially when it's illegal to have a gun there. I don't have much reason to go there anyway, you know. Besides, if I went to Oakland, they'd try to get me drunk and make me play in Bomb. It's too close to San Francisco. they'd drug me. They'd shoot me full of kratom and put a bass in my hand and prop me up on stage. Can't do it. All right, so.
All right, well, for Biafra, who spent nearly 30 years as a leftist pundit, doing as many spoken word appearances as punk rock shows, Trump's ascendancy confirms his darkest conspiracy theories about fundamentalist right-wingers taking over the world.
See, the thing is, Trump's really not a Christian. It's funny. He plays one on TV to get votes, and he's probably appointing some, but that's not why he's appointing them.
He doesn't even play one.
Yeah, he doesn't. He's pro-abortion. I mean, the funny thing is, too, like I've heard, like, there's some rumor that some LGBT lesbian trans kid teenager killed himself because Trump got elected. I don't know if that's true or not, but Trump is a lot of bad things, but being anti-gay is not one of them.
Well, Pence he's
also,
is, though.
Trump's not only the first Republican to ever have an openly gay, I think Muslim, no, an openly gay guy speak at his one of his things. He's really not anti-gay at all. That's not
Trump?
Something
no, not at all.
Go after.
Yeah.
I don't think Trump is really anything. Trump is whatever.
I'll bet he's gone to, Studio 54 and done coke off of some gay dude's chest. Where's my allegedly app?
Yeah. I think Jim Jesus' description of him is perfect. He's like a human Rorschach because he's whatever people want him to be. Yeah. Like people project these ideas.
Make America great again. Make America
it's so
great
vague.
Again. But it's the most brilliant political slogan ever. Like people thought change was good because, you know, you put in whatever you want to think that means. But it also scared people who weren't necessarily anti-Obama. It was like change can be bad, too, you know, but make America great again. That could appeal. I mean, Hillary could have run on that slogan and it would have worked.
Anyone could have. Yeah, it's a brilliant slogan, and it means absolutely nothing.
Yeah, because
anyone can
change. Change would not have worked for a Republican.
No,
because Republicans fear change.
Well, yeah, that's what being a conservative is all about: conserving the status quo. Yes.
Yeah, it is literally. Yeah.
It's also about conserving government
spending, which is. I think most conservatives are not true conservatives because they want an endless war machine, which, you know, like even like Pat Robertson is against that, you know, like hardcore Christian, hardcore right wingers that were on Reagan's team, you know, that were like Reagan's prayer leader, you know, are against endless war in every nation, like Reverend now, us, America, not me. No miles in my pocket.
Yeah. You know, but that's like fiscal conservatism is. But you know, conservatism, if you just one line thing, that's what it. You know, it's just conserving the status quo, and that could be really anything. You know, you could have if everything Obama put into place was put into place, and then 20 years down the road, you know, conservatism would be that.
I'm amazed.
That's the funny thing.
You know
about
what I'm amazed about? I think Obamacare is going to get repealed. That's mind blowing to me. I mean, because they twisted, like, they did so many dirty tricks to get that done against the will of the people. I mean, it was like, I mean, do you know about the guy in there was a Republican in Nebraska that was like one of the swing votes on that they finally made him swing yes on that, and the way they did it was like threatening to take away an Air Force base in his state that like would have collapsed the economy there. I mean, they played dirty pool there.
I only ever heard about the Al Franken thing where
happened.
Well, the fact that Al Franken got in he did, because he was the deciding vote, and
that's a scary thought. That if you grew up watching Stone watching Saturday Night Live in the '70s like I did, the thought that Al Franken would be the decider is scary.
I know,
it's ridiculous.
I mean, I always thought he was funny, but that was
I would have thought Jello Biafra would be a better decider. So let's go back to Jello Biafra, because any hoodle, let's read some more of this thing. Read some more, please, James.
Let's go. I don't think the upper 1 or 0.1% were ever tearing their hair out about Trump.
This is Jello talking.
All right. The 58-year-old California Uber Alice and Nazi punks Feinstein off.
Yeah.
Singer-songwriter says by phone from his home in Boulder, Colorado, where he's helping his mother contact AAA to replace a dead car battery.
He helps his mother. That's square. You know,
That's funny that they put that right in the article that he's contracting AAA to replace a dead car battery. I mean, that's what you undo two
it's
bolts.
So ordinary.
But it's just an easy. Why couldn't he help? Why is he calling AAA to replace? I mean, come on. That's his, the easiest thing to do.
Because he lived in San Francisco his whole life. He doesn't know how to replace a car battery.
Oh, yeah. Come on. It's so easy. If you don't know how to change a car battery, go on YouTube right now.
If you don't know how to change a car battery.
Before you ever drive anywhere again in your life.
If you don't know how to change a car battery, I'm not interested in your opinions on how to run the world.
Yeah. Seriously.
You know, talk about like Ivory Tower. I mean, he's in a punk rock Ivory Tower. If you wouldn't know, I could change a car battery without looking at YouTube, and I've never done it. I mean, I've looked at a car battery. That's enough. You need like a wrench to unhook it, and then you need to like pull off the two electrodes without electrocuting yourself, and then you need to watch the positive and the negative when you put it back on, period. And then you bolt it back
that's
in.
That's pretty much all there is to it.
Yeah,
it's not really that complicated. I mean, changing a tire is more complicated, and that's something everyone should also know how to do before they go driving around anywhere.
The guy probably thinks at AAA when he, I mean, I could see calling AAA when your car is stuck in the snow, or when you're, you know, but calling AAA to change your car battery, you know what the guy changing the car battery must think of the guy who called him when Jello's standing over him saying, "Well, this take long. I'm a very busy man. I'm very important."
Do you know who I am?
Don't you know who I am? I'm a very important man. Can't you speed this up?
I could totally see that happening.
Can't you see him saying, like, like treating it really condescendingly and being like, "Come on, I'm doing a spoken word in town tonight. I have to go. It's important because I'm talking about the importance of the working man."
in his ivory tower of not even know how to change a car battery.
Yeah,
he's super in touch with the working man. I'm sure he probably was at one point.
Well, the roadie for my band Bomb used to be Jello Biafra's mechanic, my friend Kyle. He went on tour with us. That's a good tip. Get a roadie who's a mechanic. Yeah. The guy who can fix a carburetor with duct tape and a ballpoint pen. That's the guy you want, not the guy that can tell good stories, although he had good stories too. Kyle Knutson, I salute you.
Well, we got here. Let's move on with this article here.
Jello's a fan of my band Bomb too. I should mention that. He used to be up front drinking Heineken, watching us at a lot of shows. Heineken.
Here's him speaking.
Real working man beer there, Jello. Heineken. All right, go on.
Yeah, James. Here's him speaking again. They were ecstatic that somebody that right wing and that bigoted came along with a built-in fan base.
Trump.
A cult following, even, that you could never build from scratch with a Jeb Bush or a Ted Cruz or a Marco Rubio. True. Behind the scenes, they love this stuff. They think they can get away with so much more. After bringing up Trump, Rolling Stone let Biafra do most of the talking for nearly an hour. And it's true. When you look at this interview, it's like question, four paragraph response.
Well, that's how I do interviews too. But I'll make fun of him for it.
It's like a one sentence question.
I can't do it for 5 hours like you can.
Yeah, is one sentence.
You know what
question.
He's probably like in bed? Horrible. He probably just wants to talk. Not about his feelings either. Just about, you know, geopolitical
himself.
Crap. Himself.
Well, going to, you know, he has a lot of people out. The question was he was asked, you know, a lot of people out here are asking, what do we do now? How do we join the resistance? What do you suggest? And then he says, I said from the Gulf War onward, don't hate the media, become the media. Now, I actually like that advice a lot.
Oh, yeah.
I like that advice a lot.
I got that advice from him, like, as you know, by example, as a kid. I was like, oh, these guys put out their own records, so I put out my own records. These guys have their own labels and zines, and I did it too. And I was like, you know, punk rock was a big influence on everything I do now.
Well, yeah, the punk rock told people about things that were going on a lot.
Bitcoin is the most punk rock cryptocurrency. You could have a cryptocurrency called punk rock coin with Jello's face on it, and it wouldn't be as punk rock as Bitcoin.
This is objectively true.
Yep.
He does have more solid advice, though, too, in this. You know, he says, this does not mean blogging in an echo chamber of people that agree with you. It means going to people face-to-face.
It means going to an echo chamber of Rolling Stone and speaking to people that agree with you.
Exactly. And they may put you down the way... they may put you down the way Trump put you down first. Oh, so Trump, okay. And it may turn your stomach hearing their side of the argument, but someone has to plant those seeds. Talking about planting seeds, I mean, this is solid advice, even though it's coming from a perspective that's a little bit skewed here.
Well, he's run businesses. He can give good advice on running. I'd listen to him on businesses before I'd listen to Trump, you know?
Yeah. I mean, he's given solid advice here. He's given solid advice.
Does he have the advice that you should rip off your band members so you get rich? And
well, we haven't
FedEx.
I don't know. I need to read the whole interview here, I guess.
See, you can find a couple of choice quotes for the closing arguments here, James, in the next segment. Thanks. Worms.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean, available on Amazon.
Your house is your property.
There you go. I think everybody's going to be out of it.
All right, so I'm going to read this last little quote on Jelly Biafra. We're going to get to this hilarious news about bureaucracy anywhere, but it's somewhere. All right, so go ahead, James.
Well, he's going on about Christian fundamentalists.
Jelly Biafra.
Yep, going on about Christian fundamentalists in this entire article here. And then he goes on, I'm not sure Trump himself is one of these fundamentalist Christians. He just worships himself.
Yeah.
You know, so his entire fear, and then he's not even sure if he's, you know.
Jell-O's fear is that a politician is acting like a politician, basically.
Yeah.
And he thinks that, like, Hillary would have been better when Hillary, I mean, they're all horrible, but Hillary is particularly insanely egotistical and, like, really believed she was due. Like, she thought she deserved the presidency. I think what happened, here's my guess. I think that when Bill was caught publicly cheating on Hillary, I think Hillary wanted to leave him. And I think the Democratic Party said to Hillary, hey, stand by his side, grit your teeth and smile. And, you know, we'll make you president someday. I really do.
I wouldn't doubt that. I've heard that theory tossed around, and it does make sense. I mean, although the only other thing that would make me think differently is if they actually had that arrangement beforehand with all the other cheating scandals that actually got brought up. Like, that was basically the arrangement, not necessarily president, but just like she would always be.
Well, she was Secretary of State.
I know, but I'm talking about all the way back from, like, his governor days, because, like, all the stuff that came up during the Lewinsky trial was mostly from his days as governor. So
what if every presidential candidate is there because their spouse cheated?
That's funny.
Maybe that's how it works. Maybe that's democracy.
That's how democracy works.
Yeah. Hey, I got a news you can use. So holding a 5-ounce bar of silver in your hand, it fits perfectly and you can close your fist around it. It'd be like brass knuckles. If you punch somebody with this, you wouldn't hit them with the silver, but just having the extra weight of it.
Silver knuckles.
Like a roll of quarters or something.
Yeah, it's like hold a roll of quarters. Yep.
So, yeah, I'd rather just hold a roll of
news
quarters.
You can use.
It is good to know.
All right. So let's read about this Nicaraguan scandal.
It's not Nicaragua. It's Nigeria, not Nicaragua.
So, hey, I went to
not exactly
public school,
but
sort of.
All right. So the title of this article is
"Everything I Need to Know About the World I Learned from Jell-O Biafra."
All right. the title of this article is "With No Stealing, Nigeria's Civil Servants Struggle."
And, you know, taxation is theft, but apparently without outright obvious theft that most people recognize as theft, on top of that, the taxation being theft isn't enough.
Yeah, now this article starts off, it's tough time in Nigeria's civil service. The government money that sloshed through bureaucratic personal accounts until last year has dried up, leaving many facing a novel fate. They have to survive on their salaries.
They have to work for a living. Just wait until their government jobs go away and they actually have to work.
Well, yeah, exactly. Stories about mid-level bureaucrats in the capital, which I am not even going to try to pronounce right now because my congestion is just going to all mess it up, with luxury houses and multiple European luxury cars can no longer pay for gasoline. Others have had to withdraw their children from prestigious foreign schools and colleges. Oh, the horror. Like people, Americans always get accused, you know, people who live in the geographical region get called Americans, always get accused of, you know, having first world problems. Like, really? Yeah. Like, this
well,
isn't Nigeria, which is not
third world
considered
countries, the government live first world lives.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So like, this isn't even like the politicians. This is just the bureaucrats,
the mid-level bureaucrats.
Like in America, the bureaucrats make, you know, like two or three times with all their perks what somebody would make in a similar job in the private sector. I'll bet in third world countries it's like 20 or 30 times as much.
Oh, definitely.
If they're sending their kids to private school, because like the average person in those countries is struggling to eat, working 80 hours a week.
Yeah, and on top of that, like they're getting paid that, and then on top of that, they're getting all this graft. Like, there's something crazy. Like, there's been a bunch of people that were, I think they were either indicted or they have been convicted. But like, it was like one of them was like $127 million that he basically took on top of his salary through the taxpayers. Yeah. And this was again low level people.
There were those scandals with like tiny towns like Bell, California, where like the city council members raised their own salary to like $1.4 million a year.
That's probably what they're gonna do here. They're just gonna raise their salary, raise taxes.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, here it is. 40 million, 43 million, and 127 million just for three people alone for mid-level bureaucrats.
It's crazy. Man. These bureaucrats.
Crime pays. So does government crime.
And government crime pays quite a bit.